Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. All of our intelligent conversations brought to you by our friends now at Wise Markets. And I tell you what, man, we're eating better. We're spending less with our friends at Wise. I spent the weekend eating the fried chicken from Royal Farms, started on Thursday night, and it went all weekend long. And for months, we remock. Then DaCosta deals off Orlando Brown. We're back in the first round. They're going to take a wide receiver. Nah, they signed Sammy Watkins. They're bad at wide receivers. They don't pick wide receivers. They already had a wide receiver. They pick wide receivers. So all the mock drafts happens. I have every Peter King on. We go around the world with all this. And then we get to go back. Like I got to go back a couple of years ago when I predicted the exact Super Bowl score when the Atlanta Falcons had a 3-touchdown lead. I'm like, no. Patriots are going to come back. They're going to win. I picked the score at 12 o'clock on the media bus on the way to the Super Bowl. You talk for your whole life about your great accomplishments. Charles Davis is the only guy I found. Luke swears there's other people that mocked the Ravens draft perfectly at 27-31. I should have had you on before the draft, Charles, but you got it in writing. It's on the internet. I know you didn't change it, but I don't know how you knew they were going to go with the rangy wide receiver from Minnesota who had COVID, didn't play a whole lot last year, and that they were going to take the non-sack guy from Penn State. But Charles, I just wanted to bring you on and say, man, I've been doing this 30 years and I'm still bragging about the one time I predicted the Super Bowl score right. I'll predict that forever. But you got the Ravens guys right. So, I mean, you're going to have to come on every year now and tell me who the Ravens are going to draft.
No, I think I'm going to have to celebrate this for the next 30 years as you did. You know, I mean, I don't know that I can do this every year. And I told everyone last night at a blindfold for the dartboard I was throwing at. I had a crystal ball that was cloudy. And then I have friends at my favorite sandwich place in Windermere, Florida, a place called Parati's, where I said, okay, help me out. And they're Steelers fans. All they want to talk about was Steelers, but they tried to
make some bad people, as I know them to be. You know?
But they tried to help me out a little bit. And look, I was fortunate. A lot of what I do with mock drafts, Nestor, is very simply what I believe a team will do and what I believe a team to be in their predictive history, or I don't know. Sometimes you're just lucky.
And well, the Ravens have predictive history. So, yeah. And I've been here predicting it from the very, very beginning, and I can't predict it.
No, but I thought there was some fortunate to this because Eric DaCosta came on and pulled the GM move, which is let's throw everyone off the scent.
Let's lie. I call it the right? Liar's Luncheon, and he did a very, very effective
job. He did it masterfully. He told her, hey, he chastised us all. It's an insult to everyone in our room that's a wide receiver. Quit doing that sort of thing. He didn't just take one. He took two. And then the way that they coach under John Harbaugh, they love being educators. They love being teachers. They love bringing guys along. And if you have certain traits, they believe they can coach you into the rest of it. That's why Oway, you know, King came up very well. I know he was Jason before the draft. I know he's changed it to Obi or something along that.
Olafe, I believe. I want to get it right.
Yeah, Olafe Oway. I want to get it correct for him, whatever name he wants. That's the name he should have.
He sacks quarterbacks. We'll call him anything he wants.
Exactly. But you remember, he had 0 sacks last year. You know, he had like 6 or 7 the 2 previous years combined at Penn State. So he was a guy who put pressure on the quarterback but didn't get him on the ground very often. But I thought for the Ravens, he plays with that speed, the workout ability, and I think that they feel like, yeah, we can coach him into all that. Wink Martindale, I'll scheme him into some sacks. I'm not too worried about that. Not many guys at his size running sub 4.4.
Where are you on the wide receiver train with the Ravens? Because I was a member of the Liars Luncheon on that Monday. I'm on the little Zoomy Zoom. I was out at the doing a charity golf tournament with my friends at Leonard Raskin, Raskin Global. We're out from Mount Washington Pediatric. I used to go to the Liars Luncheon. They would feed me up out there and, you know, we go table to table, you know, the drill, right? And I have a fun game I'll play with you a little later on in the segment, but I'm watching it. I waited 40 minutes. I didn't raise my hand. Then I thought, all right, I'll raise my hand. Harbaugh liked my hair last time. I have pandemic hair. So I raised my hand and I asked a question because he had already gotten flippant about the wide receivers. And this was my question. I'm going to give it to you because I didn't feel like I was being flippant. I felt like I was being respectful and saying, all right, I hear all this wide receiver stuff and I hear all the angst and I hear the reporter's angst and I hear your angst back. And you can go back and watch the tape of this. And I said, for both of you, and Eric passed it to John and John passed it off the river, which you can do in these Zoom things, right? And I said, what do you expect the productivity level from that room to be. Because they're if you don't want to pass the ball, you're not going to have receiving yards. I'm not convinced they ever really want to pass the ball. I think passing's what they do when they can't run, and that's been my witness to this for 2 years, that when they run well, they don't have to pass. They're never going to sign a free agent. We sort of know that they're not going to go that way. But to go back into the draft, what now becomes the level of expectation where you've used all of this draft capital in an offense where you aren't like everyone else? You really don't want to throw the ball 40 times, ever.
I think it's efficiency. It's similar to when we were kids and the colleges were running those true option attacks, the wishbone, you know, the power eye, where it was all option football, all those things. Yet of the 10 times they threw it in a game, they wanted to be efficient and they wanted to sting you downfield. How many times did we watch Oklahoma play and all game long it's a wishbone right, wishbone left, and then finally the quarterback heads that way and he takes two steps back and throws it as far as he can and someone settles under it downfield for a big play. He may throw it 5 to 10 times a game, but they're going to break off 30 yards a chunk on this. Now, I'm not saying that's what you get in the NFL, but they want to be more efficient off of that run game, which means Bateman being picked, a bigger style receiver who can run in the seams from the slot to go along with Mark Andrews, who's already a big tight end. I think that increases the efficiency of where you're throwing the ball. Hollywood Brown's tremendous. You can hit him over the top. A smaller type receiver, not as forgiving for Lamar Jackson. You're looking for those guys that are going to make those catches for you, work in the inside, right in that sight lines for your quarterback. And those throws towards the inside part of the field, those in-breaking throws that are the better, easier throws for your QB off of that run game. That's why I thought Bateman might qualify there. I didn't know I would be right. I'm not going to sit here and act like, I knew it. But it made sense to me even while Eric DaCosta was chastising us, because we've all been through the GM drill. We all get told different things. I just cut through it on that one and said that made sense, and it worked out.
Well, the totality of the draft for the Ravens, they pick another wide receiver, the thoughts about the offensive lineman. And, you know, I don't take phone calls anymore. I did that for 25 years. I have these intelligent, but I can imagine the phone calls on Sunday and Monday and the internet. They didn't take a lineman. They have Villanova. They know what they're doing. They've forgotten more about this than anyone, especially in this building, right? Where the continuity of, we have too many draft picks. Most organizations can't get enough draft picks no matter what. And Eric's like, well, I'll be picking next year and the year after that and the year after that, because Ozzie was picking the year before that. That they think about these things in Orlando Brown. They're playing chess. They're like, we're going to lose him any year anyway. We don't really want to sup 2 years from now, even though we'll be the ones picking it. Let's go get that pick right now. Let's get it in the first round. Let's get the extra year on this kid from Penn State, the way they did with Lamar. And on 27 and 31, one of the reasons if I would have had you on last week, Charles, that I never would have thought you could be right, I didn't think they would make both picks. I just thought the way they play poker is the number 8's going to fall to 17 and they're going to get a steal and move up, or they'll be happy with what they get at 27 and they'll move back and they'll play that game, because no one climbs and falls that ladder the way they do, and reading the old Jimmy Johnson chart, but having their own science about it. I just didn't think they would draft 27 to 31st. I thought they'd be moving around.
Well, that makes absolute sense as well. And when I do a mock draft, I don't do trades. I don't do anything like that. I'm not smart enough to say, okay, this team trades here.
It's already a Rubik's cube. Let's not put it on Mars. Leave it.
You were at that golf tournament. I played it as it would lie. That's all I ever do. That's why, you know, when I put Mac Jones 15 to the Patriots, I thought if the quarterbacks were all gone, they may have to go up to get one, you know, and if it was Mac Jones, they might have to move. As it turned out, they didn't. So it looked like I had it right. It just, you know, I just don't make trades. I just don't make moves. That's why I didn't have anything else going with Baltimore other than this is where they're supposed to pick. I put people's names next to it and off they went. But it made perfect sense what you were thinking, that they would manipulate, move, go. We saw how the Jets did it. Heck, the Giants did it. Dave Gettleman never gets out of the first round. He traded down twice in this last draft.
He's got the most famous quote of all time, right? Like, if some other fool wants to do it, let him do it.
You know, he said, I will not be fleeced, right? And guess what? He didn't get fleeced. He got the extra picks. He got Kadarius Toney right in the first round. He got the pass rusher we all thought he needed to go get, in Aziz Ojulari in the second round. Got Aaron Robinson, a nickel corner from UCF. I thought he did a terrific job. I thought Joe Douglas did the same, going back at 14 to get the guard, Elijah Vera Tucker, to help out his young quarterback and put him next to Mekhi Becton. And he traded with Minnesota to get that done. And then came back and got his runner in the fourth round of Michael Carter, when we thought he'd have to come back and get him earlier.
Big Joe D was the Turk up here in Baltimore now. Big Joe D's got that purple thing going on, man. Oh, yeah,
listen. Purple and green, you can wear that together as a combo.
Oh, you know, he took me to the Eagles after party. It was 12 below in Minnesota, and I had free beer and pretzels. So I was very, very happy. Charles Davis joining us here. Old school CBS and NFL Network, and a great pickerer of players of all things purple. He's going to become our insider. I want to have a little fun with you. I want to go back, talk more draft, but I want to go old school. I have this picture I want to bring up here, and I want to tell you a story you won't believe, but this is a 97 draft. There's Ozzie, Phil, there's Eric, Ron Marcinak, dear Ron Marcinak, and all the players up here. And back in the day, I put these pictures up. This was, I guess, the 02 or 03 draft. Phil was still here, so maybe 01 or 02, and there's Joe Ortiz and TJ McCrate, who went on and got himself a ring or two as well. So back in the day, I would have the scouts out on the Monday after the draft, and we'd eat vanilla ice cream to honor Ron Marcinak, who once gave me a crock pot when I got married. Thought my wife wouldn't have to cook, which I thought was great. Old school scouts, right?
Yes,
so I got to, you know, Brian Billick and I became friends early on, and like through all of this, and I knew Phil from the very beginning and David Modell and all that. So I had some very special access at the turn of the century. And on the Friday before the draft, because the draft was always on Saturday, beginning in 99, I would go into the building with envelopes and pieces of paper. And I would work from the war room in the old building. Now I've been in the new building. I did this in the new building for a couple of years too, but I would go scout to scout and I would ask, and some of the guys didn't want to play. Ozzie would never play, but Vince Newsom would, you know, I mean, some of the guys would play. Joe Douglas always played. He loved it. These guys loved the game. So the game was, I want you to write, and we were good then, right? So we were picking in the '20s always. So you never really, it wasn't Peter Boulware era where you're picking fourth and John Ogden. It was either, you know, I would say to all the scouts, who do you think we're going to pick? Who do you think we're going to get in the draft? And write it down on paper and put it in an envelope. And then on Monday night, all the scouts would come out. It was a big party. We'd eat crabs, the whole deal, right? And I would go envelope by envelope. And very rarely would any scout ever have the name of the actual player that would be drafted. It would give me an idea that the Ravens love Dan Cody because they get him in the second round, or players they love. I'm trying to think of some of the players. One of the kids that the Titans drafted that year. I don't even know. Vandenbosch, maybe some. But names would pop up.
Oh,
but very, very rarely. If I would have gone in, I'm going to ask Eric this. If I would have gone into the building and said, give me the two players you think that are going to be there that you would take at 27-31, that they could actually do it. It's that hard. So I guess all these years later, it made me think of that story. And I found these old pictures. And I said, to hit 27 and 31, man, it really is really hard to do. And I don't think even in the building that they would know that for sure those players would be there in the way they were.
It takes a lot of serendipity because you have all those people ahead of you. And if you're not an active trader up to go get that certain guy that you want, it's hard to do because so many people can make moves. We've already heard Urban Meyer, the rookie coach in the NFL, right? Tremendous in college. We know that. I think he's got a good chance to be excellent in the NFL. I don't know that it's the greatest thing in the world that he's out there telling everyone, God, I really wanted Kadarius Toney, but the Giants took him at 20. You just move, right? You just move on. You take who you get. You keep going. You don't spend a lot of time on it. But that tells you how it is because in his mind, he thought that he had a shot at Kadarius Toney. That was his target at 25. And in fact, in one of my mocks, I actually had him going there. You know, I thought that that would work out. But when Dave Gettleman got out of his draft pick, moved down, he still wanted speed. All the top receivers are gone. He decided speed was more important to him at that pick than getting the pass rusher, which he had more of a choice of at that time. He took the speed, and Kadarius Toney became a first rounder.
The legend of all of this, right? Like, I wrote a book on the Ravens championship at the turn of the century, and that whole thing turned when the Ravens were the Browns on the clock and trading away, making a mistake and trading away for the pick that became Ray Lewis, which was their second pick in that draft. And then the next year, Ozzie dealt with Atlanta, who had just dirty birded and went to the Super Bowl, made a deal thinking he was going to get a pick in the 20s and wound up with Jamal Lewis. Yeah. So crazy things happen. I found out when I wrote the book on the second championship that the Ravens stole Ray Rice from Bill Belichick. They were convinced Belichick was going to draft him and that they had to get in. And there's all of that espionage when Phil Savage made Ozzie trade a pick with Cleveland over Haloti Ngata and give a pick away. So there's, man, the mind games in the modern era are, to your point, legendary. We're now in every building, every Eric DaCosta is getting up and trying to lie his ass off. Like that's the game now for every GM, that the intel is so tight that I could never get guys to fill out envelopes ever again in my life, right?
Yeah, it's always a difficult thing. And the other part that goes along with it is, as the scout becomes the player personnel director, becomes the pro player personnel director, becomes an aspiring GM, and now gets a job somewhere else in the league, were the alliances, where is it that you trust that person when he tells you what you're talking about? Who is it that you feel comfortable dealing with, that they will live up to their word? All those alliances shift, change with each move in the NFL. Joe Douglas, what he knows, and the people that know him, being able to deal and work and move.
And Phil Savage in his room,
right,
who has remained one of Eric's best friends forever, right? Like, and all of those parts are everywhere. I mean, Belichick's got somebody in 15 places in the league, right?
Everywhere. And you just got to figure out who it is. That doesn't mean that it always works, but at least the confidence factor that they're telling you the truth and not having to go in front of us in the media and go, leave my wide receiver room alone. It's an insult to them, just to get people off the scent. Or the old legendary story about Mike Shanahan in Denver, who decided he liked Jay Cutler and instructed his scouts, people, everyone, don't contact him, don't mention his name, don't dream about him, don't do anything, because I want anyone to know that we're interested. They didn't even work him out. Like, they didn't do anything. And then he took him at number 11.
I remember the Ravens lying to Peter King and telling him they wanted Chad Henne, and they took Joe Flacco. Yeah. I you know, like, I've seen
it all.
No, I
ain't buying it, no.
And how about Eric at the Liars luncheon 2 weeks ago saying the reason we probably got Lamar was because we snuck him in and he didn't have an agent.
Yeah. Well, we had mom.
Yeah. Well, it's better than an agent. I've had
way
both.
Better than an agent. The trust factor is going to be way better when you're dealing with your mom, you know?
Yeah, no doubt. She won't fire you or let you down or take you extra points.
And she truly has your best interest at heart. So everything worked out pretty well for them.
Charles Davis is here at NFL Network and CBS Sports. You're a genius this week. Can I call you that? Soothsayer. You know, they call me Nostradamus sometimes. I'm going to call you the original Nostradamus, you know?
I think you wear that well for me. For me, I'm just a fortunate guy.
Hey, what do you love about the league? I mean, I want to ask you that. What do you love about the NFL? Because I'm going to be honest with you, man. I watched Roger, and it was a little bit too much Roger and a little bit too much Brown Chair. And I asked Roger one-on-one in front of him, because I know Roger this much. You know, I've been at this a little while, about blackball and Kaepernick. I find the last 2 years that the campaign, the PR campaign, I've been PR'd a little too much. And I'm, you know, look, I love the league. It's been a part of my life. I mean, you know, the city and what it means to me, the Super Bowls, the books I've written, the trips I've gone on. We're playing in Vegas this year, Charles. I can't wait for the schedule next week. But I do think that they're walking a tightrope in that way. But part of this is the popularity, the gambling, the expansion, how important the team is to the community, how important it is to everybody, the politics, all of that. I'm trying to find what I love about the league. And what I love is when Brandon Stevens gets drafted by the Ravens and is in tears, right? You know, this kid, I mean, like seeing the humanity and knowing so many of the people, I love that still about it. But what do you love about the league?
What I love about it is when we get to real football. I love when the draft has come and gone. And now we know where everyone's going. They're going to camps. They're going to fight for jobs. They're going to establish themselves. And that means we're headed towards putting a ball on a tee and it counts. Look, the draft is wonderful. And the draft in my lifetime has been the thing that has superseded baseball's hot stove league. When I was a little guy growing up in New York State, you took a baseball in your glove. First, you oiled up your mitt big time. You put a baseball in the pocket.
Did your dad put the rubber band around it or put the clamp on it?
You wrapped it tight.
Right.
And you threw it in your closet because you're waiting for spring to come. And during that time in spring, we talked baseball. The Orioles, you know, hey, they had 420 game winners last year.
Last name's Aparicio. You have to come on now. You know, that's it.
You know, Luis Aparicio, where's he going to play? You know, we had all of that. And by the way, we knew who the lineup was in Louisville for their AAA team. We had the Sporting News that printed every box score during the baseball season, every game in every league. We always talked about who's the up and comer. I remember hearing about Jose Canseco on his way up, all of those things.
Before the roids.
Before he ever got to the majors. Okay. Now, when do we talk baseball? Oh, it's almost opening day. I mean, that's pretty much it. And I don't mean that as a slight because I grew up loving baseball, but it showed me this is where the league has come up from. Because I remember when the draft was kind of like, oh, yeah, such and such took such and such. And it was a little blurb in the paper. Not anymore. Now it's all this run up to the draft that has overrun everything else going. We're trampling on NBA basketball games being played. We trample on baseball games being played.
Trampled on the Derby this week, by the way.
The Derby got run, and the beauty of the Derby was they went in and ran it about the time we went off air. So give them credit for at least being in that spot where, whoa. But the bottom line was the run up to the Derby wasn't quite the same because the NFL draft was going on. That's how big this thing has gotten. And I felt like after the pandemic, the league went all out for this draft. I think they'll tone it back a little bit, even though we will be in Vegas. I just felt like they wanted
to. You're going to tone it back in Vegas? I ain't never toned it back in Vegas.
What I mean by that is everything that we did this year, I think was to connect with us, with human beings again. So many people coming up to make picks.
Hey,
so
those drunk people in Cleveland in bad weather, they were having a good time. They was
having a great time. I think that, you know, if we just go up and make the picks, people will still have a good time. I really do. That's just the way I am. I think everyone
I'm a rock and roll guy, man. I love music. Like anybody would tell you, I'm going to feel whole, not when I'm at a game, but when I'm at Merriweather with a beer. I love music. I've been talking to musicians on the show and doing a lot of that. But, you know, the part of the draft for me, I said to my wife, I'm like, a little too much. Turn the music down. You know, like I'm kind of here to hear what Urban Meyer has to say about Jacksonville.
People be okay. I mean, for me, I'm saying one thing, but I will say one of the funny parts for me was when Machine Gun Kelly came up and professed his love for Cleveland, which he has. That's all real and all. And he talked about, hey, I'm going to be here Saturday night. And I don't think that was on the playlist. Like, I don't think that was on the bill that Machine Gun Kelly was going to play Saturday night. And he announced to the world, I'll be here Saturday when the draft ends. Come here and join me. And then he dropped the mic. I think he was supposed to make a pick. I think he was supposed to do a pick, and he's gone. And I thought that was a hilarious moment. Then when we left the draft, Nestor, when we left and we're headed to the cars, that place was jumping. I mean, that place was rocking. The amphitheater was going. I went, hold on a second. And I turned to Peter Schrager and Daniel Jeremiah and said, is that Machine Gun Kelly? And they're like, absolutely. Man of his word. He came back Saturday and he performed for the fans. So I thought
nice,
that was
man. Cool. Well, you know, I saw the whole setup and I've been to Cleveland. I was in Cleveland. The Ravens played the Browns and lost to the Browns, which is very unique, when Barack Obama did a rally and Bruce Springsteen was playing on the back end of it when Barack ran the first time, right?
Okay.
So there were 500,000 people in that city when I walked out of the state. We had to fight to get to Tower City through a Springsteen concert. And I love Springsteen, but I saw that massive humanity there. And that was the only thing that reminded me of that many people. And then I thought about like my town and like, maybe one day we'll have that, maybe, you know, and maybe, as much as I think it's overwrought and all that, it's getting bigger and it would be an incredible economic, bigger than any baseball all-star game to your point, right? Literally. Listen,
it wouldn't be a surprise at all. Everyone's competing for it. You know, Cleveland did it and still had a way to involve Canton because of the two classes coming in. I thought they did a wonderful job Saturday night when we were done. That was when they had the posthumous members going in, 9 of them, which I thought was a wonderful way to do it. That way all of their families could be there, have the ceremony, do all the things, and you know, and honor these people who obviously are no longer with us, but they had their moment, their time. I thought that was terrific. That's a great way of doing it. That was just in Canton, right up the road. So Canton, the home of football, still involved even in the draft. I know we're in Vegas next year, and Kansas City's coming up. I know a lot of places are competing for it, and it wouldn't surprise me at all for Baltimore to get it. And when they do, it'll be great. Nashville was the last one before, and that was just off the charts.
Yeah, I hear all this Canton stuff. You know, we come to Canton often because we put Hall of Famers in every once. We do. Come a lot.
I will say this. This told me about the league as well as I finished with you, Nestor. When we were in Philly, the year we were there, Pope Francis came to Philadelphia prior to, okay, months before. And I was talking with someone who was part of the operational aspect of the draft. And they were from Philadelphia, so they had to coordinate all the, you know, the routes and what was going on, the whole thing. You know what they told me? Did they use the Pope's visit? Think about this now. The visit of the Pope, the Pontiff, as their test run for the NFL draft.
Logistics planning.
How about that?
There's nothing like a Super Bowl. I mean, you know, I've been to 27, we're there, and they know how to do these events. That's why I said, doing a weekend in Cleveland, they do Super Bowls every year.
They
do
everything. But how about that? The Pope is the warm-up act for the NFL draft.
Well, I mean, that says it all. I mean, it's May, and we're talking football, and the schedule is the highlight of my week next. It plans my whole winter,
can't
right?
Wait. Got to know where their teams are playing. You may plan trips at that time. You know a lot of things that come out of it. But again, it's another step towards it, and that's where I think the league is absolutely genius. They figured out how to put certain things that just didn't matter before and make them important. And make them markers all the way towards each event, because then we got training camp, then we got this, we got the Hall of Fame, we got this. I think they are incredible at doing all those things.
17 games, bonus football. How about
bonus
that?
Bonus football. And I love how they did it, where you're going to play divisions versus division and based on your record the year before, and that'll change over time. And we're getting extra matchups. I believe we're getting, if Green Bay is able to keep Aaron Rodgers now, we're getting Rodgers Mahomes as one of the extra games next year.
I'm a little pissed about this, Charles. I'll be honest with you. They gave us the Rams, but the problem is they gave us the Rams here. Like, you're going to give us the Rams. I got to get an LA trip out of it. It's not right.
Well,
I'm already going for the Super Bowl next year, so I am going to LA. But I thought, man, we get the Rams at, you know, by the way,
you will love Vegas. I will tell you, I was there last year for the first time, and they have not had fans in the stands. This is going to be, it's a pristine stadium. I think you're going to love it.
Well, I love anything that's a little weird and different. I've now seen the Ravens play at the LA Memorial Coliseum. I've seen them play at the Liberty Bowl. You know, we'll never see them play in San Diego again. And I've seen my last game at the Black Hole, unless it's a baseball game. So, you know, all of this change coming, but a football game in Vegas. I mean, that gets me worked up for the 12th.
Something we never thought we would ever say about the NFL.
Well, Charles, if you get the pre-Ravens thing, yes, send me a text on that, because we're all into the schedule on the 12th. We're all geeked up. Charles, thanks for the visit, man. A beautiful
Thank you.
Visit.
Enjoyed it.
And congratulations for being a genius in Baltimore. You'll always be a genius here now.
Well, you know, you're a genius until the next pick when you mess it up, and then you're right back down the dump.
No, you just say, do you remember back in 21 when I nailed them both? It's like Ozzy. Ozzy, you're not a genius. Do you remember I picked Ogden and Ray. I'm still a genius, even when I pick Mark Clayton. It doesn't matter.
Done right there. It's perfect.
Charles Davis joining us here from NFL Network and CBS. Make sure you're following him out there for all the inside skinny on the 27 to 34, 31st picks. I am Nestor. We are having another wise conversation here. We are WNST.net AM 1570. We never stop talking Baltimore positive.